how the hell are we going to be able to pay for this stuff? Like, you know, we've already done bariatric surgery, a lot of us, or GLP-1s, however we want to lose weight. And then we go to Dr. Bates and we're like, I need all this done. But it also, nothing is free. So what do we do? How do we get the ball rolling? Where do we start, Dr. Bates?
That's a great question. So, you know, a lot of our patients, unfortunately, you know, insurance companies, as much as we want to think of them as, you know, something that's going to help us in these situations, unfortunately, I always tell patients, they're not your friend. They're also not my friends. Trust me, we don't really like dealing with insurance companies. They often want to deny things that we believe they should cover. And so a lot of it is really just saving up money. We have payment plan options, as most plastic surgery offices do.
Hey guys, it's Mel, your host of the Cutting Edge Podcast. This is a show where we talk transformation from every angle, body, mind, and confidence, with a little sparkle and a whole lot of truth. I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Dr. Omar Bates, and the plastic surgery pro, and Ashlyn Douglas Barnes, our go-to therapist and mindset queen. Now, quick disclaimer, none of us are your doctor or therapist. We are just here sharing real talk, real stories, and real growth. So grab your protein shake, settle in, and let's get into it. This is The Cutting Edge.
Hey, it's Ashlyn. Just one more thing before we begin. I will be sharing some of my own plastic surgery journey, which is personal to me and may not reflect what others go through. And if you're a current client of mine, please talk with me first before listening, because knowing personal details about me could affect your therapy. And your well-being always comes first. Now on to the show.
Alrighty, we are the Cutting Edge Podcast, and I am your host, Mel.
I'm Ashlyn Douglas Barnes, licensed clinical social worker, bariatric therapist, and bariatric patient.
Omar Bates, board certified plastic surgeon and specialist in plastic surgery after weight loss.
That's right. So all of us make up the Cutting Edge, because I am your bariatric patient as well. And today, guys, we are talking about payments. How the hell are we going to be able to pay for this stuff? Like, you know, we've already done bariatric surgery, a lot of us, or GLP-1s, however we want to lose weight. And then we go to Dr. Bates and we're like, I need all this done. But it also, nothing is free. So what do we do? How do we get the ball rolling? Where do we start, Dr. Bates?
That's a great question. So, you know, a lot of our patients, unfortunately, you know, insurance companies, as much as we want to think of them as, you know, something that's going to help us in these situations, unfortunately, I always tell patients, they're not your friend. They're also not my friends. Trust me, we don't really like dealing with insurance companies. They often want to deny things that we believe they should cover. And so a lot of it is really just saving up money. We have payment plan options, as most plastic surgery offices do. Some of the common ones are Care Credit. That's the one that we accept. There's also a newer one called Cherry. I think there's a third big one out there. I think the name starts with an A. We do not accept it, but it's accepted at other surgery offices. So unfortunately, it is one of those things that you may just have to financially plan for. And then the other thing I would say that's important is be careful where you go, because, you know, that saying, you get what you pay for, that can be very true in plastic surgery. So,
oh, yeah, I don't want to go to some cheap place just because of the money, because that actually makes me very scared. Like, what are they going to do? Because I feel like when it comes to your body, we need to just have like the best that we can find and like and feel comfortable with. And I would love to know just the number, so then we can like start figuring out like, okay, we're going to do Care Credit. Am I going to get cash for half of this? Like, how are we going to save? So we start with insurance, but they might deny us, which I know they would deny me at this point. I have no rashes. They're not going to let me in.
Oh, don't put that on record.
Ah,
no, for a week. You could be a size zero and have a rash down here.
Ooh. Well, I can start making some photos, some makeup.
We're not committing fraud either.
We're not.
We're just putting ourselves in situations.
I love it. So, hey friends, this episode is sponsored by findabariatrictherapist.com, because bariatric life is full of ups and downs and everything in between, but you don't have to go through it alone. FindABariatricTherapist.com makes it easy to connect with therapists who truly understand your journey, the mindset shifts, the identity changes, and all the real-life challenges that come after surgery. Because therapy designed for bariatric patients changes everything. Visit FindABariatricTherapist.com and find your support today.
But you're right. I was going to say, you know, when we speak of insurance coverage, the one thing that they may cover that people sometimes have benefits for, and sometimes it's actually an exclusion. I tell patients, think of it as like flood insurance. If you don't have that policy, then no matter how many letters I write, you write, your primary care doctor writes, it's going to be denied because it's an exclusion. So it's not covered at all on your policy. But paniculectomies, which are the removal of the skin from the lower abdomen, are about the only thing that can get covered or kind of generally covered through insurance. And we have a high percentage of patients who come through and we do that for them. And then sometimes, you know, some of them, that's all they can afford, right? And that's fine. They just want to get rid of that redundant skin. And others say, you know what, I want a tummy tuck. And so we take the money that the insurance is paying for the paniculectomy and then we give them a quote for the portion that's not covered by insurance. So that would be the additional skin removal, the belly button repositioning, the muscle tightening. And then sometimes, you know, generally we want to use lipo. Sometimes we do a full lower body lift. Sometimes they do something on the breasts. That's not covered by insurance. So then you can kind of do an a la carte thing for those procedures that are not being covered by insurance.
Okay. Okay. I was wondering about that because I get a lot of questions. Do you just take off the money for the insurance portion? And it sounds like yes. So you can go. You don't have to have two different surgeries. You're still in the one surgery or getting the panty done with the rest of it, and then you guys figure that out on the back end with the payments. So.
Correct. Yeah. And at some point there must have been like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago. And I only say this because I get this question asked all the time. So there's something out there or something used to happen where if part of your procedure was covered by insurance, they paid for like all the anesthesia and all the facility fees, or maybe people were just committing fraud and that was like out there. And so people always come in, it's like, oh, so I only have to pay you the extra money to do the tummy tuck, right? And it's like, no, unless you want your anesthesiologist to wake you up for the tummy tuck portion that, you know, your insurance isn't covering, like you've got to pay that part. So we give you an itemized breakdown of what those costs are. And then depending on your insurance plan, your copay, deductible, co-insurance, I'm not an expert at that stuff. Don't ask me any questions. I can barely pick my benefits every time when that thing comes around every year when we pick your plan. So they can break that down for you. And then the insurance part, you would have to just figure out what you owe based on your specific plan.
Nice. Which that's something that sometimes I think a lot of my clients don't realize. If your out-of-pocket max or your deductible is still $5,000 or $7,500 for your out-of-pocket max, and you haven't spent anything that year, it's probably going to go towards that. So you still may be $75 out of pocket. And if the whole thing, you know, maybe there'll be some coverage. But I've had some clients who've gone through all the process and got it all squared away. And then it ended up, they saved a little bit of money, but not as much as they hoped. And it didn't make it as affordable as they were hoping. And so they actually ended up not using the insurance because the savings wasn't worth it to have to go through that, which on the flip side, it may be because if you have anything else you need for the rest of the year, you've now hit your, I think in this, the one I was thinking of, it was December already and she didn't feel, she was so mad at the situation that she was like,
yeah, like, I mean,
let's wait till January, please. Let's just move that date out.
Certainly, if you are looking at getting it done through insurance, as you said, Ashlyn, that's huge, right? Because you're right. Some patients do come in, they have one of those very high deductible plans. It's like $7,500. I mean, a tummy tuck's $12,000 to $15,000, depending on how much lipo you do, if you add other things, at least in our office. So yeah, if you have a $7,500 deductible, you're not really saving a whole lot of money there.
Do you ever get breast lifts covered by the insurance? I would imagine arms and legs are a definite no-go, but...
Breast lifts are not covered unless you've had cancer. That's about the only time I know where, you know, that code, that CPT code is covered by insurance. You've got to give... Right, because when you submit something to insurance, you have to give them the diagnosis, right? And then you've got to give them... And both of these things have codes. But you have to give them the diagnosis code and the procedure code. So if you submit a diagnosis breast cancer and then you submit a breast lift, often that will be approved. Again, this is not an always. But if you put in like history of weight loss surgery or breast ptosis, which is just another word for sagging, and you submit a breast lift, that's almost, I've never heard of it getting approved. So I would imagine you're always going to get a denial on that.
So for the ladies that have had to get breast reductions, is that at least covered for insurance?
That is covered.
What's the difference? I always think of that as a breast lift. So
yeah. So good question. So think of it this way. A lift is a lift, meaning you're removing some amount of tissue, right? At minimum skin. You can remove otherwise as much as you want. And then you're lifting the tissue. With a reduction always includes a lift, but a reduction is going to be a significant portion of breast tissue removed in addition to the skin.
So if you lost it all, then you don't have tissue to remove.
Correct. So that's kind of the catch 22 for weight loss patients is generally you don't qualify for a reduction once you've gone from a triple D to a C. Because you have reduced. You've self-reduced.
Oh, yeah. I went from a triple D to a full C.
Yep.
It's wild.
So you generally don't meet the criteria for a reduction. A reduction, when you go through insurance, they have this formula. This is all nerdy now, but they have this formula that they use based on your height and weight. And then they have a number, which they call a BSA, body surface area. And then based on each body surface area, they have a table that tells you for a body surface area of one, I'm going to make numbers up here, but for body surface area of one, you've got to remove 300 grams of breast tissue from each breast. So if we see a patient and we don't think we're going to remove 300 grams, then they're going to deny that procedure.
Oh, got you. So you have to at least hit the mark.
You've got to hit the mark.
Stinks. Yeah. So if you just want kind of reduced when you had a really big, and the insurance will dictate how much you actually remove. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the worst, I mean, it's a bit of a catch 22. I don't know if you've talked about this on an older episode, but I've had women come in before weight loss and they all tell me I want a reduction. Oh, but I'm also planning on having weight loss surgery, in 6 months. I'm planning for that. And so it's like, well, let me spare you the breast reduction because if you're going to do that, you'll come back and you need a lift anyway. But the problem is I always tell them the lift is not going to be covered by insurance, but it wouldn't be covered whether you had it before or after. So
it wouldn't even matter.
Yes. So the reduction's covered on the front end, but then if they have weight loss surgery, they'll need a lift 6 months later. So, you know, why have two surgeries when you can just have one?
Yep.
Yeah. My clients are always asking me about that. And I'm like, I can understand how I would explain to insurance why a thigh or arm or in the same way that you would a appendectomy, you get rashes, especially thighs. I mean, I understand why they don't want to cover that. It's very expensive, and I understand that they think it's cosmetic, but
and you know, for the most part, the reason they cover the appendiculectomy is because same with breasts, but I mean, breasts, the other criteria is that you can have shoulder pain, neck pain, you know, strain, all that kind of thing, and we don't want that. Yeah. Obviously, we don't want that for any of our patients, but same with breasts and bellies, you can have rashes, and then your insurance is paying for prescription creams and things like that. So I always tell patients the only thing your insurance is doing when they pay for the reduction or the appendiculectomy is they don't want to pay for your creams for 50 more years or 60 more years, right? So they're not really incentivized to cover that procedure for you other than the fact that they're going to save themselves $60 years of medications. Thighs and arms, I mean, I've had people come in occasionally who get rashes in the groin or in the kind of the outer chest here. And even then, early on, we used to try to submit them. I mean, I don't know if I've said this story on air, but I had a lady who she had so much skin that hung down, and I think she was a cook as a profession, and her skin would burn over the stovetops when she would cook. And we submitted
that
one.
That's what I was just thinking,
And it was still denied. I mean, like I said, they their criteria, I'm not even sure they have criteria for arms and thighs. A lot of insurance plans just list it straight up as an exclusion when you submit that
code.
Yeah,
I know on mine, all the insurances I've had when I've had skin removal, all of them have had an exclusionary. It doesn't matter medical necessity or not. It's a no. And that was pretty frustrating because we went through the process the first time and then we got all our ducks in a row. We had all our paperwork and then they just came back with a very simple, we acknowledge the medical necessity of this. But it's an exclusion of the plan.
Yeah.
And you know, Ashlyn, I mean, that sucks, right? It sucks that it's an exclusion, but at least when it's an exclusion, it's an easy thing to explain to a patient.
It wasn't that I needed to keep fighting them because I have had clients and friends who've gone through 3 or 4 rounds and still get no's. And it's so frustrating, so much time and energy wasted, that it's so defeating when the final answer is a no.
And it's still a no, right? And so exclusions to me are, I mean,
it's
almost like a silver lining, because it's like, okay, this is just an exclusion. Don't ask us as a MIT because we're going to get a no. The problem, I feel like, and you mentioned medical necessity, right? I feel like insurance companies kind of put us in a bad place, because the patient calls their insurance tells them, yeah, your thyroplasty is covered if it's medically necessary. Okay, well, what does that mean? Right. So what does medically necessary mean, and who defines that? And so they give patients this kind of false hope that, oh, well, yeah, have your PCP write a letter of medical necessity, or have your surgeon write a letter of medical necessity, and they've submitted to us, we'll consider and, you know, we'll approve it. Now, first of all, they're speaking to someone like way low on the totem pole who is just reading off the document. Yeah, peer-to-peer,
you're not going to be like, well, the customer service person being paid $14 an hour told my client in a peer-to-peer that you would approve it.
And so then patients...
Like, I don't care.
Yeah, and patients go down this path, and then they call our office and they say, well, my insurance said they'll approve it if it's medically necessary. And mom was like, okay, great. Whose definition are they using? What's the definition of medical necessity? Because I've never heard them tell us, like, if you have this, then we will approve it. But then, like I said, they send patients on a wild goose chase. I feel like they make us look bad because, you know, we've done this enough times now that we tell patients, like, we are just not submitting this procedure. It's not it's not going to be covered. You're going to waste your time. You're going to waste our time. You know, the staff's time sitting around, filling out all this paperwork, writing all these letters, only to get a no, you know, 3 months later. But again, we've had enough experience with these that we kind of try to educate patients. But at the same time, you know, they're calling their insurance and their insurance is telling them something different. So it's a frustrating process, unfortunately.
It really is, because I know, like, when I used to be a claims adjuster, not for health, but for cars. And my good friend, Garth, was actually a health one, actually a health adjuster one. And he said it's insane what they have them do. He goes, you can, and not plastic surgery wise. So this is just regular medical appointments and denials and whatever. He goes, as long as if you do it at least 3 times, they will eventually pay. He goes, because by the time we hit the 3rd one, we've wasted too much money to not pay. So he goes, guys, whatever it is, just keep appealing, because that's what he would tell people.
Don't do this for plastic surgery.
Yeah, but don't do this for plastic.
Sometimes too, in the exploratory, because I went through that with a Toray procedure and appealed it and appealed it and appealed it. And I was like, oh, because I had done stuff before where I just kept appealing it. And eventually they said yes. And they're like, no, it doesn't have an actual code. It's considered. So they kept giving me, this is considered. What's it called? Not research based. This is considered
experimental.
So then the surgeon is like, oh, excellent. So she prepared this, like, this is why it's not experimental. And this is all the evidence that we have and blah, blah. She like went on because she had gotten some approved. And she did a peer to peer. And she was like, this is necessary. The stomach of the function of the stomach is not properly functioning and we need to fix it. And they're like, yeah, no, you can't.
No.
Yeah. By this way. So in the end, I did a payment plan with Mayo, which was fine. But it was really frustrating because I was like,
That's the deal. You shouldn't have to.
Yeah. It was frustrating because I had something functionally wrong with my stomach. It ends up it was actually something else. But it like something was functionally wrong that we could see. There was a procedure that could fix the function that was problematic. It's just the way that they were doing it, which we do it now, which is a lot more humane. Was a procedure that they considered exploratory. So the good thing was it was endoscopically done. So it was like done in an outpatient, like it was done in a way that wasn't incredibly expensive. But it was frustrating because, But at your office, do you guys do the 0%? Explain how that works, because I know some people get like really cranked because they're like, one office has 18 months, but like your doctor's office is paying for that. Like someone's paying for that. It's not just free.
Wait, what?
So with Care Credit, and I think maybe the other one is Atheon. I could be making that up. It starts with an A, but I'm not familiar with that other one. But with Care Credit, you can offer through them, right? So the physician office or the, you know, like dentist accepted and all that. But the office that's providing the product can choose from CareCredit different plans and different like percentage fees or rates. Okay. And so you may not get the same deal everywhere. So CareCredit kind of approves you for an amount, let's say $10,000. But every office might offer you different payment plans. So we offer something which I think is, you know, incredible value, 2 years, 0% interest, right? So, I mean, it's a free loan. So even
that's
if you have $10,000
in the office that I went to,
so even if you, yeah, I mean, and I always tell patients, like, even if you have $10,000 sitting in your account, like, just take the free money. Don't be a day late on your payment because you have like a super high rate.
Interest.
Yeah,
if you
have a super high rate.
You are paying for 2 years worth of. But I always tell people, pay it on 2 months before it's due. So that way it has a whole thing to go through and you could see zero and you still have time. Yeah. But there's some weird fee.
Yeah. So I think, you know, again, for myself, it's free money. You have 2 years, $10,000, but 24 months, right? So, or whatever your amount is. So the other thing that maybe, I'm pretty sure a lot of offices might run into this issue too. So because we use an anesthesia group that's not employed by our group and they do their own billing, they actually do not accept CareCredit. So the one thing in our office, if you come in and you get a quote and we have it on the sheet very clearly, the anesthesia is something that has to be paid up front. Fortunately, that's usually the cheapest of the three kind of breakdowns you're going to have. But then the hospital and the surgery fees can be paid with CareCredit.
So I think let's that say was like, the same with me, but like both times anesthesia fee was like under $2,000. So like I could throw that on like a credit card.
I was going to say,
It wasn't even the one I think that was like 4 or 5 hours. My anesthesia fee, I was shocked at how low it was.
Wait, yep. So CareCredit will not cover anesthesia and hospital fees? Or just
so it's more that the anesthesia group, at least the ones we use, doesn't accept CareCredit.
Got it. So that's where you will have to pay out of pocket.
You've got to pay that
some
part
sort
out
of fashion. Got it. Okay. So what is...
You can give them like a left kidney, I think.
Oh, nice. You could also, if your credit is good...
Part of your liver.
You could... Don't do that. You could shop around for a 0% first month or 2 year credit card. Like I recently got one to like consolidate some stuff.
That's a good idea.
And I was like, oh, and I got like 27 months. I don't even know why it was that much, but it was just something special they had. Yeah. And so that would have been good if I had a long-term medical thing that you need to have decent credit to get some of these things.
Right.
The CareCredit tends to be backed by the office. So sometimes you're able, I've had some clients that I'm like, kind of surprised that you were able to get approved for that. Or you already have it. Maybe you had like a vet emergency. So I had another client that was like, wait a minute, I've already got a line of credit with CareCredit.
Yes.
And I can ask them, you know, for a little more or something like that. You may have used it before for something else.
We've had patients too, like our, you know, people in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, who've had kids do orthodontic work. And a lot of orthodontic offices take CareCredit. So
yeah, because dentists are expensive. Like, damn.
And I have a line of credit with my dentist's office. They have their own financial, like, this is so, they probably make more money off of that. So they have their own financial part of this, like, large dental group. It's nifty because, you know, you can get a $1,200 crown and have it 0% interest. But at the same time, it's, like, kind of funny that your, like, dentist is also a bank.
A lot of places, if you haven't noticed, are doing that. Like,
Airlines. The airlines are almost kept alive because of credit cards. The credit cards that belong to the airline. I was reading, it was Allegiant, one of like the smaller ones. The actual income from the credit cards is actually what backs that more than the actual people buying tickets to fly them.
So I believe it.
Holy moly.
Well, because I have an American card. Which I can't wait for that baby to be fucking paid off because I hate American Airlines. Like, it's so frustrating because, like, we use them
a lot.
Surprised
you don't have Alaska. Like, you don't
I was going to say,
Alaska?
You were in Alaska, Hope. Like, that's such a great airline to fly.
So, kind of did. It's Eric had the Alaska card.
Oh,
We thought we were smart. One would have the American, one would have the Alaska. So then when anytime a flight was better than the other, we could just put it on whatever, right? But no, so he took that with him. So I have the American one and I haven't flown American in a few years. And then I used all the points to get to retreat, and the same shit that you always worry about with American happened. So it was like, yeah, I had a 45 minute layover, and then it got there late, and then I get to the door, flight closed. I'm like, no. Yeah, this is typical. And the lady's like, I go, it still has 15 minutes. She goes, yeah, honey, they're gone. And I was like, that's cool. And I was like, so what do we do? And she's like, oh, I'll get you on the next one. I was like, okay. And then it worked out perfectly because somehow me and Shay did not buy we got to Dallas together, but we are going to have two different ones to go to New Orleans.
She booked the flight with the longer layover.
She did. She did. And so I got to be on her flight, which was great. And it kind of all worked out. But it was just like, of course, American does this.
As much shenanigans, because I've gotten Miami. If I have to go to the Caribbean or Costa Rica, almost always go. I'm going maybe. American coming up this month. Mm-hmm. But like, they will always fix it.
They do.
They will always throw you on the next one. But yes, no, I...
And you get first dibs. We're called revenue customers. Literally, that's what one of the flight guys told me. He goes, oh, you're a revenue customer. You're going to be fine. Like,
paid for the ticket. This isn't. Yes.
He's just comparing you to the flight attendants that they're shuffling. Like, you know, you might be based here, but you've got to take a flight from Dallas. Mm-hmm. Those are non-revs.
That's true.
Oh, fair. And then the bypass people.
I'm a flight nerd. The bypass rule?
I think you should talk about the.
It's
funny you said that, and then the word, I'm like,
standby, not bypass.
I was like, is there something, if you've had a bypass, that you get some kind of, like, special priority?
That would be amazing, but no, Southwest took that away, so us big people can't get a second seat for free. So what is the average? Because I was doing the math, just 10,000 to me, okay, 10,000 two-year card, zero interest. Is $420 a month. So that's like a car payment. So I know that these are going to be higher amounts, obviously. So what is like the average? Like a typical woman comes in, we're going to probably do the 360 and a breast lift, right? So like, what would that go for?
360 lipo or 360 lower body lift?
It would be 360 lower body lift, but you're going to end up doing lipo.
Are we pricing
anyway?
Someone we know out? Maybe you, Mel.
Asking for a friend.
Asking for a friend. Online. Yeah, let's just price Mel out. What would Mel be?
So ultimately, a lot of the surgeon's fees are the same, which maybe that's silly, but like, because not all lower body lifts are the same, right? Some are definitely more complex than others, but we tend to charge the same. The thing that changes the most on the complexity is going to be the time and the facility and the anesthesia providers bill by time or we quote by time. But I'd say your average lower body lift is somewhere between 6 and 7 hours. And then, you know, you throw in we always do some lipo and you said a breast lift.
Yeah. Because I don't want implants. I just want it lifted with some fat put into it.
We're going to play a game. I'm going to guess. So tell what we need, and then I'm going to guess. We're going to see how close.
I mean, I know our prices to some degree, but I'm also guessing. Also, like, if you're in California, like, 4X, I've seen some of my friends' prices California.
No, we're talking Florida, 3.5, 4X, Orlando prices.
Yeah. So, okay, Ashley, this is what I want. I want the 360 body lift. It's going to come with lipo. We know that much. I want the breast lift, but I just want fat. Put in.
Oh, like, fat transfer. Okay.
There's something fat transfer. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all I want done.
I love that she says that's all. Okay. So no arms, no back.
No legs.
No legs.
Well, except the 360.
Sorry. You don't want upper back. Okay. I'm going to guess 37.5.
Wait, you said upper back lift too?
No.
Oh, the breast. You're probably a little over. It's probably going to be like low to mid 30s.
Okay. Because I was thinking lower body's 20.
Which is a lot of surgery.
Breasts are 15 and the transfer would be another 2,500.
I mean, a lower body's probably altogether. I mean, we're talking like anesthesia facility, surgery fees. Lower body's probably going to be around 20. Yeah. Breast lifts are actually less. Probably about like 8 to 9. And then just fudge factoring time. And
13 years ago, my breast aug only was 5 grand. And I remember thinking, holy moly, that's so much money.
I mean, you know,
I haven't had a client come through with a 5 grand breast aug in a long time.
Yeah.
They'll do them in Miami. So you have to be careful.
Miami. Yep.
But I mean, we do breast augs for us are around 7, maybe. But now, again, like we were talking earlier about this. We try to be somewhat transparent, right? I don't want someone coming in the office, getting a quote and being like, oh my God, I didn't realize a breast aug $7,000. I thought it was 3 or 5 or 2.
Right.
So we try to
cost? How are you going to have a $2,000 breast aug?
Trust me, they do it in Miami. But they might do like, you know, $6,000 a year. So they're buying their implants. Maybe they're buying them at $400 and we pay $600. So they're already saving 30% on the implant. But the quality is not there, right? Because they're also churning out like 15 cases a day. And your surgery might start at 8 p.m. and you might meet your surgeon at 7 p.m. and you've never met them before because you met some other guy, you know, 2 weeks ago. That's Miami, unfortunately.
Let's table that for a second. Yeah, we'll come back to Miami.
That's maybe our next week's.
That is wild because I got stories.
Just to answer your question quickly, implants are going to range for a set of two, probably between $1,500 on the low end. I mean, maybe a little bit cheaper, up to maybe like low 2,000s. Sorry?
That's just the actual implants.
That's just the implant, just the cost of the implant, nothing else.
That's not putting them in.
No, that's correct. That's just the implant.
That's for you to hold and look at.
I can't remember if this was on social media or if someone they were like, can I bring the implants with me? And I was like, what do you mean bring the implants with you? Yeah, she was like, I found them online.
No.
We cannot do that. And like, if anyone says yes to you,
super sterile, you should run. Very sterile. Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah.
What? Where would they even get them?
I don't know.
Somewhere on Amazon, I don't know. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe they went to Temu.
Can you imagine the surgeon being like, yeah, whatever, just bring them down. We'll spray them with...
Splash them in betadine and
put them in you. I think it's going to be encapsulated in your body. No.
It's probably not going to make it.
No,
but yeah,
so scary, guys.
So for us, it starts at 7. I would say most of our augs end up being closer to 10 to 12. And the reason is a lot of times we use mesh. The mesh is $600, give or take. A lot of times I do what's called a hybrid breast augmentation. I would say that's the most common one we do, actually. So we're adding implants. We're also adding fat in the upper pole. So we're adding that here. To give a little bit more cleavage and cover the implant, because we don't do some muscular augmentations. I haven't done that in a very long time. And then sometimes we're doing something else, like maybe some lipo for contouring. So it ends up being 10 to 12,000 for most of our augmentations. But again, if you come in and you're like, I don't want mesh, I don't recommend this, but I don't want mesh, I don't want all the other stuff. I just throw in some implants,
I want
to be in and out in an hour.
That's what I got.
Yeah, it's 7.
I'm
terrified of when I have to go get them replaced, because I know by the time I get them replaced, we're going to need mesh. We're going to need all that. That sounds fabulous.
All the things to make it like back to normal, the way it should be in. Yeah. Okay.
So mine have like aged with me. So I definitely had someone who was a plastic surgeon that was like, remind me, do you have implants? And I was like, yeah. They must be really bad or really good if you can't tell me.
Well, he probably just doesn't want to offend you. Right? Some people think it's offensive. But okay, so with this care credit, say you have the 2 year zero interest. Is that saying that you have to have it paid off in 2 years? Or is that just saying you need to have that paid off so you don't get all the interest? Like, I've dealt with that with like furniture shit. You know what I mean? Because, I know I'm not, like, for, say, 32,000, let's play numbers. So what, 34, I'm going to just do 34,000. And then that's me trying to pay it off in 24 months.
going to be like 1,700.
Close. 1,400. 1,416.
What'd you say? Oh, 34. You said 34.
I did 34. Yeah. So that's my mortgage. So obviously.
You're going to have to make an awesome brand deal.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to need. That's what I need right now anyway. Some brand deal. Okay. So basically, you're going to have to be able to afford that a month to get your all, if I wanted to get it all done.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, Mel, and I mean, I haven't examined you or anything, but that could be a lot of surgery to do all at once, right? So in some patients, that may be possible to do a lower body lift and a breast lift at the same time. In others, I might say, yeah, we have to stage this. So, you know, maybe the lower body first, or, you know, then the breasts or vice versa. Obviously, that's not ideal because most patients want as much as possible in one round so they can recover once, have one surgery, you know, all that, be down once. Right. But on the flip side, you know, it might help you be like, okay, well, now it's 20 and 12 and not 32 at once. So,
right. Yeah.
That's part of why I split mine. I couldn't financially. I mean, my surgeon didn't want me to do it all at once, but also it allowed me to do like an amount first that we paid off and then waited. Did this next amount, pay that off, waited. And then I had a revision that had like a time orientation to it. So their rule was it had to be within 1 year. So that I just had to make happen. But
your revision had to be within a year, like because
for
it was
them to pay
for them to cover the.
Yeah, for them to cover it.
So revisions, we don't get charged for those, or do we?
I still That's was charged. Specific. Yeah. So oh, okay. In this specific case, the surgeon's fee he covered, but I still paid anesthesia and hospital time and an overnight stay because that was the rule. We always had an overnight stay. So that I had to pay for, but it was still far less. I think it was like $2,000 or $3,000, and that I could just throw on a credit card.
Yeah. So that, That Got tends, that I don't think everyone does that. I've had a lot of patients who are unhappy from another surgeon and that other surgeon wants to charge them for the revision. Obviously, I don't know the background, the history between those two people, but I can tell you when I have a patient who's unhappy because of something, how do I say this? So if it's something I feel like I should have known ahead going in, or we did what we talked about, you know, I didn't tell them like do A and they chose B, right?
Right.
We talked about A, we did A, and for some reason they're not happy and I feel like I can fix it. I do the same thing as your surgeon did, Ash, and I tell them, you know, I'll cover the fee. I'm not going to charge you to fix it. If it's in the office, then there's no charge at all. Like today I did a scar revision on a breast aug patient. She had a portion of it that didn't heal very well. She had a little bit of a thick scar, which is no one's fault. I just did it in the office, revised it, and charge her anything. If it has to go to the OR, then they have to cover the anesthesia and facility fee. I wouldn't say I have a 1 year policy per se. Generally, people want it fixed as soon as possible, so they don't really want to wait.
Yeah. But they had all sorts of weird things.
Yeah, that's a little
strange. They're always just like, I've never heard of that. I think in their case, the concern was if you went more than a year, you gained weight, you lost weight, you did something else that caused. Like mine was, I had an upper back lift, it fell. We did it again, it fell again. It just didn't, like his feeling was it just didn't have a good place to tack. And so it looked really good for like 6 months and then it fall. It did the exact same thing the second time, but it's fine.
I reserve judgment.
I'm going to go with, he was a very kind man. I don't know how many upper back lifts he's ever done.
I can see the 1 year thing because it's like, with some of these things, you do have to set some boundaries, right? Because what if you came back 3 years later and said, well, remember this thing that you told me you were going to fix? I want it fixed now. So, you know, I wouldn't say I have a 1 year policy, but I can see why someone would.
Yeah, I can too.
Yeah, so it makes sense. Now, I think there's a different situation when someone comes in. Like I had a lady come in, this is maybe like a year or two ago, needed the best surgery for her. You know, she came in for her arms. I told you, you need a brachioplasty, but you need a forearm reduction. If you don't do the forearm portion, you're not going to have a good contour from like above the elbow. Yeah, forearm. I think people call this a lower arm. I told you, you're not going to have a good transition from your upper arm to your lower arm. Finishes the console.
You were right.
Yeah. So in a matter of fact, I told her, and actually, because you have so much hanging skin, not quite as much as a lady who would burn herself cooking, but a lot of hanging skin with fat, right? So when you have a really heavy fat and a lot of adipose tissue in the arm, generally, in my experience, if you want the best result, not everyone necessarily wants this. I'm more like, well, I just want most of it gone. I'm okay with not the perfect result. I tell them we need to two-stage this, meaning go in and do lipo to debulk that area, meaning just kind of obliterate as much of the fat as possible, and then come back and do the skin removal. Because when you try to do it all in one stage, inevitably you have more skin relaxation than if you separate it into two. You're still going to get some skin relaxation, but it's going to be a better result. So she neither did the two-stage, nor did she do the form reduction. And then she comes back and she says, you know, it's like maybe 3 months, 6 months past her surgery. And she's like, yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of looseness here. And like, this looks weird.
Oh, no.
And I looked at her and I said, no. And I was like, again. She didn't. I don't think she can afford it. But I pulled up my consult note and I basically read to her what I had said to her, you know, 6 months before when I met her. And I read it to her. I was like, you know, I do not think she will get a very good result from doing this in one stage. I recommend that she do a form reduction. I recommend that she do two stages. And she's looking at me and she's like, I don't remember any of that. And I'm like,
is why someone has to go with you.
Yeah.
It's too much.
I think that was convenient that she did not remember that.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, I see what you're saying, Ashton. And I mean, I know I said it to her. I don't write things in my note if I didn't say it to someone.
Right.
And a lot of times I even bold it because, you know, we use a medical record system that patients can go in and access. So if someone's ever going back and looking at that note, even if it's me and I'm like, well, what did I say different to this patient or what did I really stress? I go back and I look, or if my office staff goes back and looks, it's kind of easy to find. But if a patient ever goes back and looks, it's easy to find. And so, you know, I've debated. I mean, so it's an interesting statistic is patients only remember about 20% of what you tell them, right? Mm-hmm. So that, like, let that sink in for a minute. So you might spend an hour with them and they might remember like 15, 12 minutes of what you've said to them.
Oh, that sucks. Yep.
And so I believe that she doesn't remember that. And, you know, sometimes I kind of have this like internal struggle, like, do we make patients come back a second time before the big surgery just to make sure, you know, like they understood everything, they don't have questions. I mean, they do have a pre-op, but by then they've already booked the surgery. Or do we do that when, you know, we strongly recommend A and they pick like B or C or something kind of strange. They start to negotiate pricing. I mean, it sounds like this lady wouldn't have done what I recommend anyway because of financial reasons. But I also hate to hear like someone come in and say, well, I don't like this. And then you tell them, oh, yeah, but I told you this wasn't the best option for you. And they're like, well, yeah, I don't remember that. I don't like that feeling of having an unhappy patient. So,
well, because it also makes you feel like you're lying, but you're not like, I didn't lie. But then you also don't want to call them a liar. So you're like, no, you probably didn't remember it, but I also wrote it in our thing that you can go back and look on. Because, like, that would have to be hard because it's like, well, I really told you. I do recommend
Your arm probably was more functional, yeah? I mean, it looked fine, yeah? Her arm looked fine or not really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it looked fine. Like I said, it just wasn't the best aesthetic result we could have gotten her.
Yeah. You could have done. It could have been better if she picked the better route, it sounds like. And I think when we talked, I think in one of our first episodes, we talked about that, like, hey, in the beginning console, like, that's a big appointment. That's not just like, oh, we might. It is a might, but it's also like you're learning everything because then you can book it and then now we're having surgery. I personally would like a middle appointment. Just so I can make sure, like, I got everything, but I probably would call your office, too. So it's just kind of interesting. It really depends on your preference, because I think some people would want to go right in, and then some people like me would be like, can we
have
one more?
It is interesting, because plastics is just fast.
It is fast.
Most other, like, there's another pre, but I think of all of mine, like, nope, I went in, we talked about it, we scheduled it, I put some money down, I saw ARNP at some point, a PCP, had to write something, maybe got the Mayo had like a whole thing you did that wasn't even within the department.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it is. Because I even think about like other surgeries I've had where there's like a lot more in between. Bariatrics for sure. That's a lot more in between.
Yeah. I mean, I've almost every, even my surgery for my leg, I had like 5 different surgeons looking at this thing before I actually got it done. But that's also too, because it was a spiral fracture and people in Salem was like, I don't want to touch her leg. And then people in Portland were like, we'll do it. And one insurance was like, we're not going to take them. So I had to go with the other, which is fine. It was OHSU, which is a great hospital. But like, even with a leg surgery, it was like multiple visits before we got to surgery. And I feel like that's happened with all of my surgeries. So it would be weird to go from consult to book to now I'm seeing the surgeon again. So
yeah, I feel so much is kind of game day. I know it's not really, but like, definitely game day where I'm like, hey, thoughts on this part or that part? We talked about this. We talked about that. Because a lot of times my surgeons would be like, just remind me day of. I'm like, okay.
Well, I mean, I think some things you can talk about day of, but other things are definitely not. Like, I don't want to change the plan game day.
No. But I think like, I don't know, like this part or that part. Like, yes, we have to have the general what's going on, but it's going to come down to like how we draw it.
So how long is the consult then? Is it an hour or more?
A consult is, depending on the patient, depending on the number of procedures. Or I mean, sometimes I see a patient and they want to talk about everything. Arms, breasts, back, you know, tummy, okay, buttock, thighs. That one's going to be closer to an hour. You're going to have longer consults if someone's, you know, 60 and has medical problems versus someone who's 20, you know, maybe had one surgery or no surgeries, don't take medications, you know. So the more complex patients are going to require more time spent in the room, right? And then the more body parts we talk about, the more time, because every body part has its own nuances, has its own, I mean, the complications are generally the same, right? Like the risk of wound opening, the risk of bad scarring, the risk of, you know, bleeding, infection, all those things. So that part doesn't take too long, but every body part has its own.
Any of mine were an hour.
Sorry?
I don't think any of mine were an hour.
I would say I spend, if not an hour, especially with weight loss patients, unless, again, they're coming in and they're like, I just want to talk about arms. That can be like a 25, 30 minute visit maybe. But as you add body parts, you know, examining that, talking about that, you know, I have patients who come in, maybe they are coming in for a tummy tuck, but for most weight loss patients, if you just do a standard tummy tuck, you're not going to address mm-hmm. the entire trunk, let's say, right? So I usually tell them, I want to look at you from the front, the side, and the back. And I will tell you if I think a tummy tuck is not the best option for you. Again, that might be the option you choose, but I'm going to tell you what I think is the best option. And if you choose something else, then when you come back and you say, hey, I don't like this. Yeah, that was your decision, not mine. Right. And so going back to the revision thing, that's where I draw the line. And I say, if this was something we chose together and I didn't tell you, like, I don't think this is the best, then I'm going to take that burden. Right. I'm going to like waive my fee and fix this for you. But if you made that decision despite my advice, then I'm not waiving the fee because I told you from the beginning that I think this was going to give you the best result.
I think that's fair, like 100%. So let's recap a little bit here. So basically we try insurance first for the panty section. Typically those could get denied. There's nothing really for arms and legs. And then if the insurance doesn't go, then now we need to go to cash or some sort of credit line. Now, for your guys' credit line, is there like rule? Like, what are the rules with getting the credit? Is it just like your normal credit card situation, or are they looking into like every little thing? Like, is this like a hard credit? Is this a soft credit?
I think like blood type. No, I'm kidding. I think it is like a typical. I mean, I don't know. We just swipe the card. And that's not even me.
It's
a hard pull. They look at your credit score. I'm pretty sure they look at what, I don't know, Ashlyn, you've done this, it sounds like, so you're probably more of an expert than I am.
Yeah.
I do think there's some backing of the office. I do think the office takes on some, because I've had clients who have terrible credit be able to get care credit, and I've been shocked they've been able to get care either from the vet or from somewhere. So they don't back it?
I mean, not as far as I know.
Oh, okay. I thought they backed it a little bit, or that they paid the interest rate or something. I don't know.
Because once we, you're correct. I think you're correct in the sense that if we, like when we offer the, you know, 0% 2 years, we pay a higher fee to care credit from, but that's from the money that they pay, you know, so like, let's make up a scenario, $10,000 tummy tuck, patient gets the $10,000 approved, they pay us. We might pay them like $1,000 in fees because we offer that program. But we don't back it. I mean, the patient's still taking that same loan and still paying the same amount. We are just paying care credit more.
Correct. But I think there's some agreement that they will give credit to people that maybe Walmart or someone else wouldn't, because it's not backed. I think there's something to that. And I don't know what that is.
Maybe
I definitely had clients who I'm like, you had a back bankruptcy. Like I know their entire life story. So I'm like, you were able to get some care credit. I don't think you could get a car right now. So I do think it's not secured or anything, but I do think like, I don't know. I've definitely had clients who've been able to secure some care credit.
You're just shocked about it. Yeah. So have you seen people get fully like their whole thing, like $33,000 completely?
Yeah.
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 Wow. That's
you impressive. Also request the amount that you want. So they could obviously say no, but if you request, like if you say this is the amount I want, they will consider that. If you just do an open one, sometimes they give you a little more. I got a little more than mine, which was nice because then I didn't max it out. But
right. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then the nice thing about it is like, you know, we're talking about staging, right? So let's say you're getting two surgeries, they're 20 and 15 or something. If you apply for the 20 and you pay that off, then you can go get your 15.
Right. Cause that's still like an open line of credit.
It's still an open. Yeah. It's a line of credit.
So that would be good. Like that would help everybody's credit scores, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now the other thing we haven't talked about, which is probably the most important from the mental health standpoint, you could also save money. And pay cash. So sometimes sometimes I have clients like when they have their bariatric surgery, they already know. And so they start saving and then they say, well, if I don't need the money, then I'll go on a really, really nice vacation. I'll buy a car or I'll do something. Mm-hmm. And so that way there's at least some money saved up and then they have a portion of that saved up. I think in this day and age, that's very, very few of us, but can be done. I've had clients who've had side hustle, social media. There's some money that they earn in some way. I had one that maybe it was child support. And they just put it in another account and function without it. Oh, yep. OnlyFans. Yeah. Whatever your side hustle.
I tried OnlyFans. I didn't get far.
No.
That whatever that side hustle is. You're right. We don't get key
fetish. Just talking about plastic surgery, because my guess is you wouldn't be able to perform it. I'm sure someone out there would pay you money for you to talk about surgery.
Because
OnlyFans is just the monetization of something. It doesn't have to be
that's true.
Yeah, so true. If there was someone out there just wanted to talk to you about fancy cars or about, I know you have fancy cars. You
like yeah.
Could do and that. Now we found out planes. So his OnlyFans could be planes.
No, I'm into planes. I don't own any planes.
So I think we would be amiss, or I would be amiss, if I didn't speak about the mental health side of borrowing money that you don't have or getting into situations with people or thing. You know, we just talked about OnlyFans more joking, but like if you feel there's coercion going on, either someone is going to pay for it who maybe you don't have the best relationship with or is coercive in giving you that money, or you find yourself in situations that you don't want to be in anymore, whatever that may be. So I do think sometimes, and I did this where I, you know, did math. I got the loan. Oh, I can pay that for sure. No problem.
$400 a month.
Yeah. A couple $100 a month. I think mine was like $332. If I remember correctly. The first one was. Yeah. And I'm like, my car at the time was like $250. And I was like, whoa, I made like $29,000 a year with a master's degree in social work. But in my head, I was like, yeah, I could do that. No problem. And it did kind of put me in a place that wasn't great. And I paid on it. I think I paid on that one for like 3 years. Right. So, didn't have the best interest rate. because Mayo Clinic does not accept care credit. So that I had to find alternative financing, which I mostly got through the bank, like Wells Fargo. And then I had a 0% interest card that I was like, oh, I can totally pay this off in a year. It's like totally doable. I'll just send them like $1,000 a month. Totally fine. Of course, it was not. But you do get in this position. And again, I think sometimes it's a vulnerable population too. It's like, you just want it done. You just want to look normal. You just like, I was still pretty young at that point. So I was like, I still have runway here that I could have a normal looking body for a good portion of my life. I could still wear a bikini or a crop top or, and ironically that didn't happen until like the past few years. And this is now like 10 years ago. But I think that because ultimately I did not have the right procedures in the beginning. And only the last set of procedures were really the ones that actually made my body look less rectangular. But I think that, one, you can save up money but sometimes it's really hard because you, in the economy, everything else costs a lot, but also like this feeling of like, I lost the weight. I did the thing. I did the hardest part. And now I want the reward of having the body that I hoped that I once did. And so I do think there's a lot of people who put themselves, there's a large hospital system that you can do a 401k loan against. And then you pay it back in your paycheck. And I've had people where it's like they can't quit their job. They have to pay that money back or their partner doesn't know about it. Or their spouse doesn't know about it. It's just coming out of their paycheck. So it's kind of hidden. You definitely don't want to get into financial deception, which I think sometimes, the partner's like, oh, I think you look fine. It's fine. You can't afford this. And you're like, oh, I came into some money and I'm going to pay for it cash. And really, it's a loan that you took against your 401k. We certainly don't want people draining their 401k. Huge penalties when you're under, not at retirement age.
I did not have only a patient do that. I don't advise it. And to be honest, I did not know about it until after either. We did two stages. She was young, also like maybe late 20s, early 30s. She, had a very good position and kind of like climbed the rank of her employer, saved up a bunch of money. And she's like, but I don't have money to set aside. So she drained it for both surgeries and told me after the second, and my heart kind of just sank. I was like, that's not what I like to hear.
Because that's long-term money. We don't really think of the value of that money.
That's your retirement money, right?
Yeah. And it's also super penalized. So even if you drain the whole thing, you give a bunch of it up. You don't even get all of it. And if you didn't calculate it correct, you may have paid for your surgery, but then you have a huge tax bill. I've had clients or friends even who've done that for they owe money on their taxes because when they go into when they're self-employed, they don't realize how bad it is. Or, they made really good money their first year in private practice, especially during the pandemic. And then they have a $20,000 tax bill and they're like, oh, well, I quit this job and I had a 401k and they sent me the check. So I just cashed it. I'm like, whoa, no. They're like, you just cashed it. And the thing is, I've had 401ks.
I know. She quit this job. Yeah. And now we don't know.
Yeah.
The Riverside man has been a
pill today. It's the national outage. It's not even us. So, trying to reconnect.
It has been interesting.
I kind of want to take a photo of how she's
sick. Do you think she knows? She's been,
there we go. Oh, you're so lucky. I was about to take a photo of where you paused. Oh, so lucky.
I know it's a good face. It always is on my electronic, and when I'm doing telehealth, whenever I get frozen, it's the finest faces. Yes. And it'll be frozen like for that for 10 minutes. And the client's like, your face is frozen on my side. I'm like, oh God, tell me it's not when I was making a face. They're like, of course.
Of course. Well, you're animated. So
I am. I'm super expressive.
Yeah. So what happened to the lady? She quit.
Okay. So they sent a check. So sometimes what happens when you quit jobs, they'll send you this 401k check. And you're supposed to take it
and
to
roll
whoever
it over.
You're going to give it to. So you're going to roll it over into an IRA or whatever. No, she cashed it.
Yeah. Ooh. I've done that.
So then she owed a tax time.
In my early 20s.
I've had friends who've done that who have private practice. They cash it and then they pay the tax with that. And I'm like, girl, now you're going to owe tax on that and you're going to have another year of tax. Like, I don't want any letters in my
mail. I'm kind of curious to hear your story.
No IRS, no DEA.
It wasn't a big amount. That was the deal, is I left Wells Fargo and they gave me like a, I think it was like $5,000 or $6,000 check. It wasn't anything crazy because I'm one of those.
Sounds like you said $500,000.
Oh, I know, no.
Five or six thousand.
Five or six thousand. Yeah. So I basically, once I have a kid, I have a house that kind of covered all that up with, like, you know, all the deductions and shit. So I really didn't know anything. But
that is nice. That is an exception, not a rule. Anyone out there listening to her, do not cash that check. Put it in your IRA.
Don't do any 401k.
Yeah, I should have just rolled it over. I was just in a financial situation where I needed it. And I was like, well, you got to do what you got to do, people. And I get it. But I was not playing around with $20,000, $30,000 worth of money. It was $5,000. It was
I do like the idea. I think, Ashlyn, you brought this up earlier. You know, when you have your bariatric surgery, and even when you know you're going to have it, right, that gives you 6 months of planning before your surgery, right, with all the kind of pre-work you've got to do, let's call it. And then usually you're not a good candidate for plastic surgery for at least a year, if not more. Yeah. So you've already got, let's say, you know, a year and a half, 2 years kind of baked in.
Yeah, and especially if you're doing like a side hustle, like you're doing something extra, mm-hmm. and then that money is in another. Like if I was going to tell someone like from scratch how I would recommend doing it.
Yeah.
I would pick another, like an alternative revenue stream, whatever that may be. I don't know, crochet hat.
Keep saying alternative revenue and all I think of is like OnlyFans, but I get like...
Okay. There are many other alternative revenues other than OnlyFans, but OnlyFans is monetization of anything. There are actually crafters, knitters, people that sew that are on OnlyFans that are not doing anything with nudity. It is simply a way to monetize what they do. But Patreons.
I have a Patreon.
Paid for Facebook pages that are support groups. There are many creative ways for...
Etsy.
Etsy, yep. You know, making something, selling it on Etsy, especially if it's something there's not a ton of. If you can get into like that niche and it may be related. I think I had someone that made like bariatric stickers that I had at some point.
Yeah. Sarah did that.
For her surgery. I was like, that's a great idea. Bariatric stickers.
My only point was you keep saying alternative and it sounds like you're like just using that as a cover word for something.
No. But it's funny.
I know what you mean.
In the therapy world, alternative rev is actually what I teach. I just got back from Greece teaching on too. So it's actually what I teach in the therapy world. It's alternative revenue. So that's everything that's not one-on-one therapy.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So like my directory or my courses or the journals, those are all alternative revenue streams. So.
Yeah. So like that's kind of the deal, guys, is like I do DoorDash. Like that eventually will just be a side hustle where I don't actually need it for stuff. And that actually would be perfect.
I was just thinking that too.
Yeah, actually, as I'm talking, I'm like, oh, once I get everything to where it used to be, I could just use that money to save for my surgery. Because I would like to put at least most of it on its cash. That would be my goal. Like, I don't know how long it would take me to save $32,000 right now. Maybe a few years. I have no idea. Or a really cool contract that comes through. Whatever comes first. But that would be really cool is to have, like, I average right now a little over $1,000 with DoorDash a month. So that could be perfect of just like, okay, we put like half of that away or as much as I can of that away towards something else. So that's a great way to do it, guys. And I don't think anybody should feel ashamed having side hustles. I think that's the best thing in the world. Like
especially nowadays, if you don't need more than one realm of income.
Yeah, passive income is where it's at, guys.
I don't know. I mean, I used to work in the restaurant industry when I was, I think, in high school. I mean, that's a good way. If you're like over 21, you can bartend. That's a good way to make, or, you know, waitress. That's a good way to make money and tips. And
100%.
Again, not financial advice. I think some of that's not taxed. So.
Oh, it's true. Just be careful with taxes.
I didn't say
guys.
That. Delete that.
There, no, have a financial person that handles your taxes when it comes to self-employment.
Throw that money in a jar.
It gets real weird. Oh, yeah. Cash.
Does your office take, like, if I brought in $10,000 worth of cash, would your office take that? Okay. No. So people need to plan. If you're going to have legitimate money, you've got to figure out a way to launder it because it's got to go in the account. You can't bring it.
I don't even think we take checks, to be honest. I think we take cash, I was going to say. I think we take credit cards. And I'm sure you could pay with a debit card. So, like, if it's in your account.
But you'd have to legitimately put it into the account.
We've had.
I have ideas. I'm just not going to say.
This is at my old practice.
I'm sure haven't had a drug dealer come through and be like, you don't want to take my cash.
This lady had come in and, first of all, I think like at one point someone paid with like ones or something for some, I mean, looks like we've heard all kinds of stories. And then one person, I don't think we were supposed to take personal checks, but somehow someone in the office took a personal check. Lady has her surgery and the check bounces, right? I mean, like typical story. And then she never comes into the office again. So
what do you do in that situation?
I would imagine no checks. Yeah, I think I brought in cashier's check. This is 13 years ago.
Yeah, some people do take cashier's checks. I mean, the problem with that is it's hard to track. Like, someone's got to go to the bank and deposit it. I think cards are much easier to swipe.
They are. They are, 100%.
You may have to call. I know for some debit cards, like, you may have to call and ask for a one-time.
Oh, you do.
Larger amount to go through, even if you have the money in your account. I've had to do that before where I've had to call and be like, I'm going to put through an amount that is in my bank account, but I need you to approve it.
Oh, when I went to Wells Fargo, it's point of sale and then withdraw. You do have limits on each of those, and every card is different because it's actually based on the customer and their habits and what they're doing. Most everywhere is $500 withdrawal a day. And then your point of sales of a few thousand, actually, just depending on what your account looks like. So,
which is hilarious because with a credit card, they could give two shits. If you have $30,000 on there and you swipe that bad boy for $30,000, oftentimes they won't call, which amazes me.
Seriously, get it together, people. So are we missing anything with payments? Anything we should think of? I think the only thing I want to touch on with mental health side is just like, when you feel the urge of like, I need to do this now, go talk to a therapist because you don't.
Yeah, I do think, especially if you're considering things that are unsafe, unwise, again, like getting into situations that are potentially dangerous. So there definitely have been stories of people that are drug mules or like get money through not great ways, but it's a big amount of cash. Like, if you are thinking, well, I'm just going to go down. We had a guy in Orlando, backyard. I think it was a shed or a garage. Yep. He was a plastic surgeon from another country and he just kept on doing it, except like sterilization. And like,
hospital.
Who was
and
got this?
Work done. I'll send you the article. There's the dentist that was recent, like a year or two ago. He's a Colombian dentist.
I've heard of that one.
That was his garage.
Everything happens in Florida.
Was in Orlando.
Yeah.
But I get it. It's like, well, you know, I can get it done in Miami for this much. And it's like, all right, well, is that the best choice? Is that the safest choice? And there are plenty of decent surgeons in Miami. But if we're just going based off price, or maybe we're going to go see somebody who like maybe isn't fully licensed or fully like, there's some issue. Like, if you're going to take unnecessary risk, definitely go talk to someone. Don't put yourself in financial situations. Don't get involved with people who will offer to pay it and then you owe them. Like, there's some contractual relationship obligation.
There's
something.
Yeah, there's been interesting stories when, like, probably it's two people who aren't married and, like, one pays for the surgery, because then you get into, like, HIPAA. You know, because technically, like, if, let's say, a man and a woman, but they're not married, let's say the man pays for the woman's surgery, you really still can't talk to anything to the man unless she signed paperwork that says, like, you can discuss my care with him. And then if there's a problem and, you know, we talk about refunds, I mean, this is kind of getting way down the line, but if there's a problem and you want to give them their money back, well, she technically never paid for the surgery. You can't even do a charge. I mean, like, if you get credit cards, you can't do chargebacks. It's a huge deal. So, I agree. Like, if you're going to pay for it, do yourself, plan for it, make sure you can afford the payments or save up ahead of time to either make your payments nothing or minimize, you know, have a big kind of like down payment for the surgery.
Yeah. Treat it like a house.
Hopefully it doesn't take you 30 years to pay it off, though.
No, that would be wild.
There has to be more like a car. An olden days car. A car from like many years ago when you paid off cars in 3 years and that was normal.
Yeah, I've paid off two cars now.
they didn't cost $60,000 at the base model.
No.
That's
cars
true.
Now, man, are wild.
Wild, wild. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening to all the randomness that comes along with the Cutting Edge Podcast. This is where you get your up-to-date information. We are your resources. Message us. Let us know what you need. We will get it to you as soon as possible. Put that down in the comments or DM us. And until next time, everybody, be safe and be kind to one another.
Yeah.
Yay!
Thanks.